Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 51. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com. As you can probably tell, my co-host David Todd is not with me today. He's in New York City. I think he's going to be celebrating Thanksgiving there, at least the first part of this week there. I believe his show is on hiatus, or he has somebody sitting in for him this week. So we'll hope to get together back with David on Wednesday and filling in for him. We haven't heard from him in a while. Alex Cazora. Alex, happy Wednesday.
Happy Monday. Yeah, the bye week's screwing with you, Dave. Yeah.
It sure is.
Ready to talk some Steelers just like the Pilgrims and Indians did in Thanksgiving past.
I'm pretty sure that there was probably they were probably complaining about the Phil Luckett coin flip as well, too, right?
Exactly. That's how my school play did it, so I think that's how it works.
Oh, man, that seems like – how many years ago was that? Do you remember?
You were
probably just a little thing when that happened. It's hard to believe. I'm trying to look it up right now when that actually happened. 1998, does that sound right?
I think so, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, November 26, 1998. So we're coming up, how many years ago was that?
17?
17. You was just a...
Wee little Cazora.
Yeah, most definitely. Boy, I remember that. I was in, where was I at the time? I was in Athens, Georgia, I think. At the time, my best friend and his wife had moved up there and invited her family and me and my wife up for Thanksgiving there. And I could definitely remember sitting around the table watching that and getting thoroughly upset at that time. So, man, where's the time gone? Let's see here. Bye week, as we opened up with there. I don't know about you, but I enjoyed it. I got myself healthy for the final six games here, and hopefully the Steelers did as well. Obviously, Ben Roethlisberger should be good to go after the bye. David and I kind of ran down the mock injury report last week. Mike Tomlin will meet with the media on Tuesday. You know, what are we expecting? You know, maybe an update on James Harrison, on Matt Spaeth and those knees. But outside of that, and maybe Shamarco Thomas and his knee, those are the only three people really that we should be concerned about, right?
Right. I throw in Terrence Garvin, too, see what the status of his MCL sprain is, see if he's going to be close to getting back. You know, we had this brief conversation on Twitter the other day about Spaeth. You know, Tomlin ruled him out on Tuesday, you know, immediately at his last press conference. I'd have to guess, and this is just speculation on my part, that Spaeth might have got under the knife and had some sort of surgery just to be ruled out that quickly. That's kind of what it speaks to, so I'm not sure what his status is going to be.
Yeah, and I think I quit back at you as well, too, thinking that it wouldn't surprise me to learn that was indeed the case. I mean, ahead of the bye week and to be ruled out that early, it would make the perfect time if he did have some sort of little flap or tear or something going on in that knee to get it knocked out then with hopes that he could come out after the bye. Now, we are only speculating here. I asked David on direct message on Twitter. I said, make sure if you're around, you ask Tomlin that question on Tuesday to see if he gives you a direct answer on whether or not Spaeth had some sort of procedure done. And unfortunately, David won't be at the press conference on Tuesday. So maybe we'll get maybe another member of the media will ask that. James Harrison, of course, missed his first game of the season prior to the bye. You know, one would think that was only, a one game instance. And then, them doing that ahead of the bye as well, too. Hopefully he'll be back. Boy, Shamarco Thomas, you hate to see a guy that's really only a special teams contributor you know, missing any time as well, too, so we'll have to watch him. But, you know, other than that, a good time for a bye. You know, so one thing that we hope to learn on Tuesday, and it's probably not going to be good news, Alex, is, you know, whether or not Mike Adams is going to be able to return to practice. And you know, if he doesn't, if he's unable to return to practice by the end of Tuesday come 4 o'clock, he's got to go on IR. So, you know, is that kind of what you're expecting to happen at this point?
That's what I feel is the likely scenario. Now, Tomlin, of course, could say something totally different. But, I mean, you've heard no news about Mike Adams. Tomlin has not said anything, you know, just been very noncommittal to him. I would be very surprised if he starts practicing. I think it's just put him on IR, and that'll be maybe the last you see of Mike Adams as a Steeler.
Yeah, because he'll be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, and although, you know, his market value is probably next to nothing, you never know if a team might want to sign him to a 2-year, you know, with some sort of guaranteed money in there. Won't be much, obviously. I mean, based on his track record, in my opinion, he's a swing tackle right now, I mean, probably not a guy. You know, if you were going to start him, you'd probably start him on the right side, not the left. But Mike Adams absolutely must begin practicing by 4 o'clock on Tuesday if he's going to play at all. If he is able to return to practice, the Steelers will have another 21 days from that point to make a final decision with him. However, if he doesn't return to the practice field Tuesday at 4 o'clock, they have to put him on IR. And, you know, to hear Ed Bouchette and, you know, some of these other beat writers talk, they're not expecting him to practice. That's one thing we'll be looking for. Marquise Pouncey, I doubt we're going to get any update on him, but did you see the Instagram this past week that had him listed in it, Alex, or had him photographed in there?
I don't think I did. Clue me in.
Yeah, he's, you know, I think this is before, didn't those guys just all go out to dinner just recently? It was on Marcus Gilbert's Instagram page. I think, you know, the offensive line had an O-line dinner, you know, early on last week. And there's a picture of Pouncey in there along with the rest of the offensive linemen. He's still got that boot on that left foot.
Okay, is there some sort of cast on his leg?
No, it's a boot. It's a walking boot.
Okay, because he had a cast on in a picture a couple weeks ago, so maybe he was able to ditch that and go to the boot.
Yeah, and that might very well be the case. But I guess what I'm getting at is if he's still in a walking boot as of the beginning of next week or of beginning of last week, there's no right. way he's going to be ready to practice this week. And one would think, you know, next couple weeks. And people kind of ask him, well, you know, if he's not going to return this year, you know, why not just go ahead and put him on IR? Well, here's the thing. He's already on IR. He just has the designated to return tag. So, you know, they can string this out all year with him if they want to. So, you know, I would not definitely be looking for him to return. I don't know. To me, it'd be a shock if he returns by the end of the regular season, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at. I'm just amazed. I know Tomlin has been very, you know, even more so than previous years, very secretive about injuries. But, I mean, he's hoarding that Pouncey information like it's gold in Fort Knox. I mean, I just don't get why it's such that big of a secret about Pouncey's status. But I think you're looking definitely trending towards that unlikely side of him playing this year.
Yeah, maybe the hope is that if they get into the playoffs and – you know, and can make a little bit of run. Maybe they get him back by the Super Bowl or something like that. But I mean, let's not forget this guy's been out since, what was it, week 3 or week 4 of the preseason, something like that. That's a lot of time to miss. You have to worry about some atrophy kind of, you know, setting in at that point, you know, as well, too. So I think everybody will be shocked if he returns at this point. And really the same goes for Mike Adams as well. Let's see. We don't have any mystery, where it comes to the concern of Joe Flacco, do we?
I mean, you know, I know no one's a Baltimore fan here, no one listening, but you almost have to feel for him with the injuries they've had. I know the Steelers have had it really bad, but Baltimore, I mean, they're in just as rough shape.
Yeah, how many guys? And they also lost Justin Forsett for the remainder of the season on Sunday to a broken, what was it, forearm? Flacco MCL, ACL. They're thinking on that. I mean, most definitely gone for the year. So, you know, that's going to put Matt Schaub in the driver's seat for them for the rest of the year. It's not like they were. Not like they were going anywhere, but I mean, it definitely can concern. You know, they've got games upcoming against the Bengals and the Steelers, you know, at the end of the season. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, interesting what happens in those games. Here's the list of their IR guys, Alex. Once again, not that anybody's going to play a violin in the background and shed tears here, but Michael Campanaro, remember him? He was he had a touchdown in that first game against the Steelers, right?
Yep.
Will Davis, cornerback. Matt Elam, safety. Asa Jackson, corner. Breshad Perriman, their number one draft pick, never even got on the field. Fought a knee injury all year. Alan Reisner, I don't reckon tied in. I think he was hurt during the preseason. Micaiah Reynolds, don't recognize that name. Steve Smith Sr., we all know about him. What was that, an Achilles on him, right?
Yeah, his career could be done. I mean, Baltimore lost their top three skill guys.
Terrell Suggs obviously went out early. Lorenzo Talaferro, Zach Thompson, Darren Waller, another wide receiver. Julian Wilson, a corner. Cam Worthy, another wide receiver. And Jeremy Zutaw, another guy that really a real underrated loss there as well, too, on their, on their offensive line. Not a lot was written about that, I don't think, last week when he went on IR. So, yeah, you think the Steelers got it bad. You got to remember that Joe Flacco and Justin Forsett's name will be both their names will be ended up on this thing pretty soon as well too. So like we said, the Ravens have games against one against the Bengals and one against the Steelers, and the Steelers obviously it would be in their best interest to run the table, obviously, these remaining six games, and right now, I mean, it would really be a disappointment if they dropped that game against the Ravens, right?
Absolutely. And that wasn't that list, which is extensive as it is, doesn't even mention Dennis Pitta, who didn't play at all this year, and they're not sure if he'll ever play again. I know they've had Crockett Gilmore, Max Williams do some nice things at tight end, but there's a big loss there. You come in, Matt Schaub has played terrible, the last 2 years. He's become the king of the pick sixes. There's no reason, even though Baltimore always plays you tough, there's absolutely no reason the Steelers should even make that a close game. That should be almost a blowout, just considering the state the Ravens are in right now. Whenever your top receiver is Kamar Aiken, your starting quarterback is Matt Schaub, your starting running back is a rookie in Buck Allen, that should be a W.
Prior to the start of the season, I forced you guys to do a game-by-game prediction, and it just goes to show you how hard it is to look at the schedule and prior to week one, go through and kind of predict where teams are going to be and predict the wins and losses. I mean, it's part of what we do. People expect us to do it, but it just goes to show you how things can change, because when you looked at the Steelers' post-bye week schedule, you thought, oh, yikes, you got Seattle, you got Indianapolis, you got Cincinnati, you got Denver, you got Baltimore, you got Cleveland. You're thinking, my goodness, there's a possibility the Steelers go 1-5, in those games, depending on how some things shake. Now, we don't want to jinx them or anything. There's a possibility, there's just as good a possibility the Steelers could run the table the remainder of the way and go 6 another way. Kind of things have kind of set up for them. You got Seattle, which will obviously still going to be a tough game this coming Sunday. But, it's looking like now that Marshawn Lynch is not going to play in that game. He's having to see a specialist on Monday. Might have some sort of a sports hernia that will probably sideline him. Now, of course, they've got Thomas Rawls, who just had a fantastic game against the 49ers, but that was the 49ers that they played there. So, the Steelers might catch a break there. It's looking like they're going to catch a break against the Colts with Andrew Luck. I think you even posted something on Sunday that still the word is that Luck's not going to be ready to go in that game. However, Matt Hasselbeck is 3-0 as the Colts starter so far this year in the games that Luck has missed, and the Falcons gave the Colts, they served that game on the platter to them yesterday. The Bengals, of course, are the Bengals. They've really kind of escaped the injury bug, but they are now losers of two straight, thanks to the Arizona Cardinals beating them at home on Sunday night there. So something to pay attention to. Denver, Lord knows what's going to happen to the quarterback situation by the time they you know, by the time the Steelers play them in Week 15, because you got Brock Osweiler had a decent game. I don't know if you saw that game, Alex, or some of it. Had a decent game on Sunday. The Broncos got the win there. Then, as we just mentioned, you know, the Ravens in Week 16 without Flacco, and you know, Lord knows what we're going to get with the Browns by Week 17. But I think it's obvious that Johnny Manziel, assuming he can still walk, will be the starter in that game as well too. So, you know, where's your head at right now as far as what the Steelers can do in these final six games?
Well, it's exciting. It's promising. And even, you know, with a smaller sample size of just six games, stuff could still change. You never know what's going to happen. The NFL is such a week-to-week league. But, I mean, you came into this, like you said, Dave, you know, after the bye at the beginning of the year, it looked like this would be the hardest part. And now this might be one of the easier sections of it. I mean, you were supposed to face Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, Joe Flacco, Josh McCown, and you might not face any of those guys. You're definitely not going to face Flacco, probably not going to face McCown, probably not going to face Andrew Luck. So, I mean, just right there from a quarterback standpoint, the quarterbacks you thought you were going to face, you're not. So that's obviously huge. Steelers are playing well. They're getting healthier. You know, the AFC North, it's still, you know, on the horizon. It's still not right there ready to grab, but with Cincinnati losing last night, it's now technically two games back. Though, of course, Bengals own tiebreaker with one game to play against them on December 13th. But, you know, I think I'm at where everyone else is at with some pretty good optimism.
Yeah, and you know, as I laid out in the post Monday morning, basically, long story short, the Bengals need to lose three of their final six games, and the Steelers have to run the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's basically what it boils down to. Because, as you said, the Bengals just said they own a lot of, you know, all the tiebreakers there. You know, especially if the Steelers win out and the Bengals only lose two games. You know, in essence, the Bengals have to lose three for the Steelers to win the AFC North. Of course, throw in your ties or whatever as well too.
But the consolation prize is even if you have that fifth wild card spot, you're gonna face the AFC South winner. So it's Indy, Jacksonville, whatever mess there is there, which the Steelers, even on the road, probably going to be favorites for.
Yeah, you would think in those games, of course, Andrew Luck, of course, would be back, one would think, in time for the playoffs. But I guess right now we've become huge Houston Texans fans, right?
I guess so. I mean, yeah, that AFC South is just what's the top record there? 4-5?
It's a losing record, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not even 500.
No, it is 500. 5-5. Indy's 5-5. Houston's 5-5 right now. So, I mean, what a mess. You got Tennessee three games out. You know? they only have two wins right now. So, most definitely something. Look, here's the thing. Steelers should just need to take care of their own business, and I'm sure that's what you're going to hear from them over the next several weeks as well too. But I mean, let's face it. Anything worse than 4-2. Will be a disappointment, right?
Right, because if you're 10-6, regardless of how everything else shakes out, 10-6 is definitely going to get you in the playoffs. It's probably going to get you the fifth wild card spot. If you go 9-7, things are going to get a lot more tricky with tiebreakers and then your scoreboard watching more. So if you can go 4-2, finish 10-6, you're likely to get that fifth wild card or spot. You're going to probably face the AFC South winner. You're probably going to be the favorite for that game. I think that's the best-case scenario for the Steelers.
Which of the remaining six scares you the most? This one upcoming against the Seahawks?
In a sense, just because it is at Seattle, you're up there against the 12th man. You know, Russell Wilson's one of those guys that's just so tough to cover. You have to cover as a secondary for 7 to 8 seconds because of the way Wilson can extend the play. It's tough to play man coverage because if you do, you lose your eyes off Wilson and he can beat you with your legs. The Bengals game still scares me just because I know the weapons they have. You know the big fan I am of Hugh Jackson, the creativity that he has, a good game plan he has set for. I still think that's a pretty good defense that's dealing with some injury, which is foreign to them, but they'll probably be healthier in 3 weeks from now. So I think it'd be close between Seattle and Cincinnati.
What scares you the most about this 2015 Steelers team as we sit here with this team coming off the bye?
I just I want to see a better pass rush from the outside linebackers. You know, Moats, Dupree, Harrison, Jarvis, they've all been really quiet over the last couple weeks. And really, the sacks they have created are a lot of just, you know, hustle plays and good, you know, good job by the coverage and things like that. I want to see somebody just have a dominant game where they just can't be blocked. And you don't really have that from any of those guys. I mean, you could put... You know, you could. These guys are all interchangeable. I feel like they're all, you know, the same production. They're all kind of the same style. You could slap Jarvis Jones' number on Arthur Moats. No one would probably know the difference. You could say that same about any of the other four guys. So I really want to see somebody step up and turn that corner and just provide a great pass rush, because that's something I think that's been lacking.
The thing is, you know, it's easy to look, and I wrote about this the other day. You know, obviously, I think would you agree the defense, at least you know, heading into the bye week, is probably better than what we thought it would be, or not probably, it is better than what we thought it would be, I think, heading into the start of the season, especially where it comes to sacks and takeaways. But, however, I mean, this defense is a bend, and ever so often they break. But, I mean, they will get the turnovers down, or what, they have something like six turnovers inside their own 30 so far this season, to be exact. And I don't know about you. I mean, I know you read the post. I haven't really gotten your feedback on this. But what do you think about the problems this defense has had so far this year on first down, and most specifically against the pass? Because we know that even though their defensive yards per carry numbers – against a run are right in the middle of the league, they're much, much better when Steve McClendon is in on the field in base. So that leads you to believe that not only is this defense struggling in the nickel against the pass on first and 10, they're also struggling against the run in nickel on first and 10. Do you view that as being the root of this defense's problems, or does it go much more deep than that? You know, in other words, I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, these teams are gaining 7 yards, you know, on first down against them. It's hard. I don't care what defensive coordinator you are, what defense, you know, what defensive players you have. It's so hard to defend down and distance situations where you don't have the advantage on.
Even though there's been a change in defensive coordinator, Dave, the philosophy stays the same. You need to win on first down. You need to put teams in third and long. That allows you to play that off coverage and defend the sticks and not worry about the 5-yard curl underneath. And that also allows you to start with your pressure packages and creating pressure that creates turnovers, that creates, you know, your offense getting good field position. It's all one big domino effect. So, you know, whenever, you know, you did the study and you say that, you know, teams are getting, you know, 7 yards a first down, you're putting yourself in second and three, you know, they're able to run the ball, the offense becomes a lot more flexible, it's a lot harder to defend. So it all starts on first down. If you can't defend first down, you can't put teams in third and long. That's a lot harder for any defense, especially this defense with the way it likes to play, with that cover three, playing their corners off, being able to read the quarterback, read the route of the receiver. It changes the whole complexion of it. So you're absolutely right. And I think one of the biggest challenges is, and you kind of touched on it, was just defending the run out of nickel, because nickel is the base defense. It's not the 3-4 anymore. You're playing nickel 65-70% of the time. There's games where you'll play nickel 90% of the time, just because teams are so 11 personnel, 3 wide receivers out there. And how do you defend the run whenever you have that extra guy that's not in the box anymore? You remove that nose tackle, so instead of maybe a 7-man box, you have a 6-man box. It's a lot tougher. So I think that's one of the biggest issues the Steelers have had trouble trying to figure out. Oakland is a great example of that game.
We have this in the charting. We just need to dig it up. I didn't dig it up for my report the other day. What would you say this defense is averaging in yards allowed per rush on first and 10 out of the nickel? Over five?
I don't have the number. I can try to pull it up here real quick. I would probably say it's hovering around that 5-yard mark. I'll pull it up here because I don't know the answers.
All right, I'll talk and kill time here.
the old David Todd trick, yeah.
Right, but I'm going to bet that it's over five. in the nickel while you're looking at it. And for those of you listening, this post is on. It's a couple pages deep now off of the first page here. Hopefully a lot of you got to read it, but let me run through some of these scenarios with you. Of the 273 first and 10 plays that the Steelers defense has faced so far this season, 38.5% of those plays. Now, these are first and 10 only, just first and 10. But 38.5% of those plays have resulted in a gain of 7 yards or more. And that's the worst percentage in the National Football League through the first 10 weeks of play. Additionally, 26.7% of those 273 first and 10 plays that they faced this year have either resulted in another first down or a touchdown. So in other words, we're talking 10 yards or in the end zone on those plays, on 26.7% of those plays. And it's not hard to imagine. Again, that's the worst percentage in the league. Now, of the 31 passing explosive plays that they've allowed this so far this season, of course, 31 passing explosive play, as many of you know, is 20 yards or more. 18 of those 31 passing ones have come on first down, and the average gains against the Steelers defense on those plays is 30.44 yards. Now, I don't think that obviously wasn't the worst in the league, but still let you know, I mean, 18 of 31 explosive plays on first down, you know, it's definitely when teams are attacking them. And here's the final thing that I kind of ended that study with. I know some of you think I'm absolutely, you know, nuts for tracking what we like to call the ANY-A, the NEA, adjusted net yards per passing attempt, differential number, and how it relates to both the offense and the defense. Absolutely infatuated with the stat. currently their defensive NEA number on first downs this year sits at 7.91, and that has them sixth worst in the league when it comes to that number. That's way, way, way too high. And you know, I've said it a few weeks ago, if that number, I don't care what down, first, second, third, fourth, whatever, you know, if their number does not get in line, you know, under six, you know, start trending that way over the course of these final six games, while they might get into the playoffs and they might win a game, I will be shocked if they're able to go deep into the playoffs, because this is a passing league. Defense still matters in my, and it really matters in my opinion when you get to the playoffs, and especially your pass defense as well. So this is one thing that you better hope the Steelers defense is able to get better at. Is most certainly the pass defense moving forward. Alex, you got some totals for us?
I do. I know you love that stat. I mean, that is like as your child. I'm pretty sure.
I mean, what do you think about?
No,
it?
You've done the numbers. You said there's a great correlation between that stat and success, right?
Oh, especially when it comes to winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so there you go.
You know, go back and find that post that I did on teams that have won the Super Bowl over, what was it, the last 25 or 30 years. I mean, it really is phenomenal what your defensive NEA stat needs to be lower than if you want a good shot to not only play in the Super Bowl, but win it as well, too. So that's one thing I think you'll be looking for to lowering. And you can bet I'm going to be right on top of this the whole way. Now, what's the average yards per carry against the Steelers nickel on first and 10?
It's a little bit lower than we thought, but still not where you want it. It's 4.5, and then just to compare that to the 3.4, which you would expect to be lower, and it is, it's about 3.5 against the 3.4. It's about 4.5 against nickel. The sample size is almost identical. So, I mean, it's not the worst, but it's not something that's going to make Keith Butler very happy.
So it's not being run on first and 10 out of the nickel is not what is killing this team.
I think it's, you know, Tomlin talks about it a lot, and he uses a particular word, and I like it. It's layers. So, I mean, I think it's part of the issue that you've definitely seen some big explosive plays that have hurt the Steelers on first down. It's always a combination of things. Rarely can I point to just one thing. You'd like to be under, you know, you'd like to be around 4 yards per carry out of nickel if you can, you know, if you can help it. 4.5 isn't ideal, but I don't think it's the, you can't look at that number and say that's definitely it, but I would like to see it come down.
But what do you think about the against the nickel in first and 10 situations against the pass? That's obviously a problem, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. No, it has been. And again, it's hard to pinpoint exactly what the issue is. I think part of it is scheme. I think, you know, just in general, the way you beat the Steelers cover three is instead of, you know, running on first down and trying to invite, you know, putting yourself in third and long, you throw in first down, you pick up 5-6 yards. Everyone runs these elongated pass games now. They run, you know, their screen game, their bubble game. They run these RPOs, you know, the run pass options that give yourself, you know, different options to look at the box. If there's seven defenders in, you might throw. If there's only six, you might run. So, you know, offenses have just countered so much and are not, you know, just going to willfully put themselves in the third and long by trying to run it against your base defense a couple times on first and second down. It's become such a challenge for defenses, and especially ones that are kind of built the way the Steelers are.
All right, put you under a microscope here. It's been a long time since you've been on the show, and you are accused of being an Antoine Blake apologist.
I am. How do I plead guilty?
And there will be no sentence in this show, although a lot of people listening would probably like you to have one. But in all seriousness, and you've heard David and I kind of talk about this, and I know, look, you're not going to find me. I have not secretly been on NFL.com casting votes for Antoine Blake for the Pro Bowl. So I hate to disappoint you there, Alex. Additionally, I know what he is. You know, and I've said it all along. He's a downhill corner, a physical corner that should hopefully help you defend against the run. He's not been able to do that. Missed a lot of tackles this year because we think maybe two things, maybe a shoulder and a thumb ligament or a ligament. With all that said, right now, where are you with Antoine Blake? And you know, for those people out there that want to see Brandon Boykin on the field, you know, defend all this.
Well. You know, I don't want to defend it, you know, fully. I obviously Blake is a shell of himself. He's clearly hurt. I'm sure he's going to have one or two surgeries a la Mike Mitchell after the year because he's playing with a cast on his left hand. They said ligament damage on the last broadcast, I think. I've seen some issues with his right hand. Just watch his right shoulder after plays. He holds it tight to his chest. It doesn't really move a lot. He only tries to, you know, move it whenever he has to in the action of the game. You know, and you and I have similar thoughts on Antoine Blake. He's not going to be a number one shutdown corner in this league. Of course not. He's a zone corner, a number two guy in a scheme that asks its corners to get really physical and dirty against the run. He can do that, but he can't do that with two bum arms. And I'm getting to the point where you can just, you know, as much credit as you give Blake for being tough and gutting it out, knowing that he's going to be a free agent after this year, he wants to play to try to, you know, keep his you know, whatever, you know, stock there is up. And as much as I understand, you know, why Gay's in the slot, and I'm cool with that, and I know a lot of fans aren't, but I understand they want to keep Gay in the slot. They see Boykin as a slot guy, you know, and that's all they see Boykin. There comes a point where you just say Blake is so hurt and becoming so ineffective at what he does well that you just can't keep justifying putting him out there because I look at the Oakland game. There was the one play. I think it was early in the third quarter. I had a vine of it. There was a play along the right sideline. It might have been the Cleveland game, but regardless, and Blake tries to come up on the sideline to push the receiver out of bounds, and he just doesn't even try. It just completely whiffs, and the receiver picks up, I think, 11 or 14 yards. I mean, Blake's going to make that tackle in 2014 when he's healthy. You're not seeing that now. And that's not an issue of laziness because you know Blake's a physical guy, a guy that seeks contact, that loves that element of the game. It's what he does best. It's his calling card. So when you see just a guy just stop like that, you could tell he's just so hurt. And I think there comes a point where you just say a guy is so hurt, either A, you have to just put him on IR, get him ready for the next year, or at least sit him for a week or two and just let his body recover. Now, the bye week hopefully will help with that, it's just Blake's just a shell of himself out there, and everyone knows it.
So why? So people that are nodding their head listening to you on that, why haven't they? What would make you – why wouldn't they have gone to – Bolden by now?
The only thing I could say, and again, I'm not in their head, so who knows what the reason is. There could be some sort of underlying reason. We just don't know. But it's the same reason we've said all along. They like William Gay in the slot. They only see Boykin as a slot guy, and that's why he was brought in, because the Steelers did not have a slot number two slot guy to William Gay, because Blake couldn't do it. Cortez Allen at the time could not do it. They had nobody else. Golson went on IR. They lost Bryce McCain. And they don't want to move William Gay out of the slot because they love that hub of communication. It's what Chris Collinsworth said way back in week one on that first Thursday night broadcast against New England, that they like having him and Lawrence Timmons near each other. It's better for communication. You know, Gay does a nice job against the run as well. He's just, you know, he's a really good slot corner, and they don't want to lose the physical and the mental gain that you get from Gay playing. So they're just sticking it out with Antoine Blake, knowing that he's a mentally tough guy. It's what Keith Butler has said a lot about him, and just hoping he can kind of play through it at a serviceable enough level. You can agree with it or disagree with it. I'm not excusing it. I'm just explaining it. I think they're just so dead set on Gay has to be in the slot, and because they only see Boykin as a slot guy too, there's just no fix.
Yeah, and I think you've heard me say as much as of that. Look, we know, you know, as far as Boykin playing outside, we really don't have – all we have is college tape on that, right?
He did a little bit, you know, in the preseason, and even a little bit this year against San Francisco. He got some snaps outside, but he's been – I mean, the Eagles viewed him as just a slot guy. It's why Boykin was unhappy there, and the Steelers seem to be doing the same.
Right. And now, in the college, I think he played outside – as well as a slot. Heck, he even returned some kicks, right? Mm-hmm. And did a fairly decent job in that as well, too. So do you think this will get to a point? I guess what I'm saying is, do you think we'll see Brandon Boykin start playing considerable amount of snaps in the final six games?
Nope, I don't. I think, you know, a week off for Blake will help him maybe get a little bit better. And I think if it would have happened, it would have happened by now. So I don't see it happening, though.
So, in other words, Antoine Blake can't get any worse.
I guess that's the belief you're going to have to hold, bottle it and sell it.
You know, the thing is, you would agree, he hasn't given up many explosive plays in the past, right?
It's been up and down. There have been ugly moments. Yeah, I don't know the exact number, but, I mean, he's gotten away with some. Remember Arizona when John Brown, you know, Palmer missed him on that corner out in the end zone.
Right.
Blake just got destroyed on that play. That would have been an easy six. So he's gotten better the last 2 weeks, I think, and not giving up some of those big plays, but it's still been up and down.
He's not magically going to get better, though,
no.
in coverage. I mean, he is what he is. You know, that's kind of my defense, too, when talking about the NEA stat. When you go back and you look at it over history with teams, you know, 20 years or so, you don't see those defensive NEA snaps drop considerably in the second half of the season, because usually teams are what they are, and if anything, they'll get worse because of younger players, you know, injuries and stuff happening like that. Now, you know, sure, I'm sure we could pull up instances where it does get slightly better, depending on who they play, you know, the opposition, the quarterback, and everything that goes along involved in that. But I mean, it's not like this number magically improves by a whole, you know, 1.5 or 1.25, which really the Steelers would need for me to feel comfortable with them going into playoffs. Now, does that mean that this team can't make a run a Super Bowl or anything? No, but I'm just going, you know, we have these stats to go off of. We have the historical. History tells us that while they can get into the playoffs, that, you know, with a higher number above six like that, they're probably not going to go too far. You know, the obvious thing that I think what a lot of fans, I don't know, I would like to see it, is a rematch between the Patriots and the Steelers in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, that one haunted me as a child a lot of times. Remember 2004, that one crushed me. But yeah, you'd love to see it again, and a lot of people think that's, you know, the best matchup for New England is a healthy Steelers team. So, hey, I'm all for it.
Rank these teams. You know, rank these teams right now in the AFC. New England easily number one, right?
Of course, yeah.
Cincinnati still number two.
Yeah, I put Cincy two.
Is Denver number three, or is Pittsburgh who's number three in the AFC?
Oh man,
throw out the records. Just who's the third best team in the AFC right now?
I mean, you're looking at Denver, you know, with the best defense that's kind of been without DeMarcus Ware against Pittsburgh with potentially the best offense, or at least right up there with, say, New England for the best offense. You know, it's very, very trite, very cliche to say the defense wins championships, but I think I would take Denver because of that ferocious defense, because ability to create a pass rush, and I think at some point Peyton will get healthy enough to go back in and be a little bit better than what he has been, which isn't saying a whole lot to begin with, but I think that run game's starting to figure stuff out. I think, you know, the Broncos adding Vernon Davis, who had a nice game Sunday, is big. I think he still has some nice weapons in the passing game, Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas. So I would take Denver 3 and then probably Pittsburgh 4.
Yeah, I'm with you, too, really for the same reasons that you gave, because their defense is so good. They can get after the quarterback. They can – I mean, you got Aqib Talib, you know, in that back end back there. You know, T.J. Ward, I've always been kind of a T.J. Ward fan as well, too. And because they're able to put quarterbacks on the ground – I've kind of said all season, if they got consistent play out of this kid named Peyton Manning, you know, they're a real dangerous team. And really, that's been the downfall. Their quarterback play has been the downfall of Denver this year. And here they are at 8-2, and we're talking about downfall. You know,
I would love to see in a Denver Pittsburgh matchup, but we'll be seeing Chris Harris versus Antonio Brown. I mean, that's best versus best, and I can't wait to see that matchup.
Yeah, and if he doesn't draw him, he's going to get Talib.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So that will be an interesting game for us to see in a few weeks here, and how that offensive line is able to protect Roethlisberger against who knows if they'll have who's the pass rusher over there that's injured right
Marcus
now?
Marcus Ware.
Ware is kind of banged up right now. Who knows they have him? But I mean, we agree. I think we agree that Pittsburgh's number four.
Yeah.
In the AFC, and really, I mean. The list stops there, in my opinion, right? I mean, Indianapolis, I mean, goodness gracious. They really deserved to lose that game against Atlanta, in my opinion, on Sunday. Matt Ryan threw a pick six down in his own end. Just really a boneheaded play. If you get luck back, it changes the complexion of that team a little bit, but not higher in Pittsburgh, in my opinion. Buffalo, I mean, God, I mean, who and what are we? I mean, are we going to find out who they are Monday night against the Patriots? I would be more apt maybe to put Kansas City as the fifth-ranked team behind Pittsburgh.
I would do that. I would also – I still have Oakland in that mix because I know that offense didn't click yesterday, but I still love their weapons, and I think they have a better, you know, run defense. That secondary is pretty atrocious, but I'd probably put Oakland at 5, maybe Kansas City 6 if my arbitrary rankings.
Would you be surprised right now if it's not a New England Cincinnati AFC Championship game?
Well, I mean, I'd still be open to. I think Pittsburgh still has a chance. You know, once they get healthy or a little bit healthier, and just because of that offense, you know, its potency, and when you have a defense that is, I think David Todd says as well, it's an average defense across the board, but it's very opportunistic and it creates a splash plays. And when you have an opportunistic defense married with an explosive offense, you're in every game. I think the obvious favorite is Cincinnati versus New England. The way I'll put it, you know, I'll put the AFC into three tiers. Tier one is New England all by themselves. Tier two has Cincy, Denver, and Pittsburgh, and then everyone else is in tier three. And tier three really doesn't matter at this point. So you can sell it however you want to. But that's the kind of way I look at the makeup of the AFC.
Well, we both agree, as long as Roethlisberger can stay healthy and not suffer any more injuries, that this offense, I mean, should be able to score, you know, 25 or more points a week, right?
Easily, yeah, that's the expectation.
So, I mean, that leads back us with us talking about the defense again. We already talked about Antoine Blake. We talked about first, the problems this defense has on first downs. What else, you know, bothers you? You know, you said the inconsistent pass rush from the outside linebackers. I mean, is it right now where is the defensive end spots and safety the best positions on this team right now?
Defensively, yeah, probably. You know, I think people have given, you know, Lawrence Timmons some criticism, and some of it's been fair, but I think it's been a little too harsh. You have to remember, he had a turf toe injury at the end of training camp. That probably affected him. People are saying he's playing better now. It's probably because that toe feels better. He's able to push off and be more explosive. And when you're Timmons and you play 100% of the snaps, he's the only guy on defense in the NFL to play 100% of his team snaps. When you have that kind of volume, you're just going to naturally have some bad plays because of the high amount you have. I'll give you one other quick concern and tell me what you think of it. I think, you know, just that left tackle spot with Villanueva, as much as we love this story and as times as he can show that, you know, physicality and that just strength that he has, chop these defensive ends and just knock them to the ground, I think he's struggled. I think it's fair to say he's basically a rookie, a guy that's been far removed from playing offensive line until last year, and this is his first year in an actual meaningful game environment. He struggled. So if you look at some of these good edge rushers that could get after, you know, a guy like Villanueva, that would be another concern of mine.
Yeah, but good enough. I think it's always that's always been my mindset when it comes to left tackles in the Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger. They just have to be good enough. Max Starks was good enough, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. You're right. But I
Calvin Beecham has been a step, in my opinion, above good enough.
For sure. Yeah. I think overall, but when you get into the playoffs and you're facing some of these great pass rushers, you know, is good enough going to be enough? And that's the way I look. The Steelers are a very good chance to make the playoffs. I'm looking ahead and seeing if they could really make a run at this thing. And you look at a team like Denver, they can get after the quarterback and, you know, things like that. So that if you're just looking for another concern, that would be another one of mine.
Does he, I mean, from what I see on tape, I mean, he obviously still has technique issues. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the athletic ability, everything, you know, like I used to say about Mike Adams, all the tools are in the toolbox for him. And so far, it looks like he's using his tools better than Mike Adams did early on in his career. But even so, there's still a few of those tools that are scattered around in the front yard.
For sure, And you're right. From a movement ability for a guy of that size, the way he moves is incredible, and the skill set is all there. I mean, it just, you know, treat him like a rookie. There's a lot of those, you know, mental. A lot of it's above the shoulders for Villanueva. A lot of stunt pickup, recognizing blitzes, and just being quick with your eyes and things like that. He's had issues with that, staying on the same level and stunt pickup with your guard. You know, Ramon Foster, big issue with that. So, and I've seen improvement, and hopefully he will get better. And Munchak's a great coach, and Villanueva, you know, gave him a lot of credit. I think Chris Adamski had an article saying that basically Villanueva said that if he wasn't with Munchak, he would not even be close to the player that he is now. But, you know, just whenever it comes to playoff in those big moments, you know, Villanueva could be a weak spot.
Can he become a top six left tackle in the league?
Ooh, those are some big boy questions for a guy who still made, what, six, not even six starts. I right now I'm going to say no, but I try not to think about those things. I take it that one game at a time.
Is he your starter next year, or is it still too early to tell?
You know, the Beecham situation is so interesting. I think the Steelers, I think bringing him back makes the most sense because, one, Beecham's not going to get the money from anyone that he thought he would, obviously, with the injury, because teams are going to be a little scared by that. The Steelers will know Beecham the best in his injury history because they're the ones going through the rehab process, visiting with their doctors, and they're going to know Beecham's knee and his ACL the best. I think if you could get – I think my opinion, just by, again, you guys talked about, had a good discussion last time about free agency and things like that. I think Beecham takes a one-year deal, bets on himself. He bet on himself. He didn't take the contract with the Steelers at training camp because he bet on himself saying, I can play well and get big money in the offseason. So you kind of see that mentality of, I'm going to bet on myself. So I think he takes a one-year deal. I think he probably misses the first couple weeks of the 2016 season while he continues to recover from that ACL. I think Villanueva starts during that time period, and then Beecham comes back in, say maybe Beecham starts on the pup, maybe it's a couple week thing. So I think that's kind of the way it works. Is Villanueva will start, and then Beecham will come back mid, you know, quarter of the way through the year.
I think the Steelers would like to lock Beecham up for a multi-year deal still at a much, you know, is Beecham worth an average yearly value of new money of $6 million a season?
Again, I think just knowing Beecham, knowing that he doesn't want to take that discount because of the injury, because if he didn't have that, he would be getting probably more like, what, $8.5 million. I think he takes that. I think Steelers would love that scenario, but I also think Beecham knowing that, does not want to take that discount, lose out on that all-important, you know, guaranteed money, and takes a one-year deal, gets healthy, and then tries to cash in. Again, because he's still young, he's still not going to be, you know, he's not a 30-year-old guy at this point. So I think that's the scenario.
Let's say he's, and we don't know this, let's say he got, the Steelers had that identical money offer that they gave Marcus Gilbert, you know, $6 million a year average new money. What if that deal was out on the table still? Hmm.
What was the guaranteed for Gilbert? Do you remember off the top of your head?
Yeah.
That's the number I care about the most. I think, you know, beat.
Yeah, I mean, the guaranteed always is the most important thing there. But if memory serves me, it wasn't terribly much at all. Hold on a minute, I'll get it for you here. Pull up my contracts here. He got it was a 5-year, $30 million extension. And he received $7.65 million signing bonus on that. So when you look at his first year plus that 7.65. Now you got to remember the Steelers like to structure those things with those second year roster mm-hmm. bonuses as well too. So you know even though they're not guaranteed, you know they're pretty much guaranteed. So you know you got 7.6. I mean so yeah. I mean let's take it the same way for Beecham, let's say a 5-year, $30 million contract with a let's say you lowball him into a $7 million signing bonus.
Yeah,
does he take that deal?
That's a good deal for his injury. You know, it wouldn't shock me, but I'll stand pat with what I said, and I think that he would take a 1-year deal and bet on himself and try to really go get that big left tackle money a year from now.
Yeah, but how much do you think he's willing to play for minimum-wise? Because, I mean, obviously Steelers like to keep that cap hit low as possible with him, too. I mean, they don't want a $5 or $6 million salary out there for him
yeah.
In 2016, especially when there's no guarantee that he you know, like if you're paying him that, though, you're paying him to be your starting left tackle.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I didn't really think of that. I'm just trying to think from Beecham's standpoint of knowing that he seems like a guy that wants to be able to bet on himself. He knows that his market value took a hit, and he doesn't want to settle, and he wants to try to go get after it, you know, in 2017. I think it'll be one of the most interesting storylines because it's just so many different parts of, you know, where they're at and how good Beecham is, how other teams value him, how the injury affects him, you know, salary cap, ramifications, things like that. I think it's the most interesting offseason story.
Definitely be something to watch with him, that's for sure.
Let me ask you to switch gears for 1 second since we're running low on time. Just maybe a little preview at Seattle. Let me ask you this just to start off the conversation. Who is give me one player that scares you the most on the Seattle team?
You know who it is. He scored twice. He scored twice in the game the other day, right?
Are we talking Tyler Lockett?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that was my answer. You stole it.
Yeah, that guy scared the bejesus out of me.
Yeah.
25 catches, 308 yards already this season, 3 touchdowns, 29 punt returns, 196 yards, a touchdown there, 19 kickoffs, 460 yards, and a touchdown there. Absolutely. I think the Steelers, you know, being as out looks like Thomas Rawls is going to start, and I'm not taking anything against Thomas Rawls because he is a violent runner. But, you know, with the shape that offensive line is in with the Seahawks, I'll be embarrassed for the Steelers if they're not able to manhandle those guys, get pressure on Russell Wilson, and be able to at least keep that running game down, you know, below 100 yards. So then the question becomes, you know, can they keep Russell Wilson inside the pocket from, you know, how Russell Wilson likes to pick up those first downs and scramble and just, you know, escape the pocket and make plays that way. That's one of my biggest concerns there. And in addition to that is, you know, him hitting a big play or two for Lockett for scores. And then them being able to control you know, the area, the field position because of locking in the return game. Because, look, I go all the way back to your breakdowns, you know, that you had on Lockett, you know, prior to the draft. You were in love with the kid, and you should be. You know, I mean, you presented good reason. And, boy, they got great value with him. And yeah, he scares me. And even though, you know, Jimmy Graham hasn't, I mean, we turn around, I say Jimmy Grant hasn't done anything. He's still tied for the team lead in receptions with Doug Baldwin with 44. They're just not probably using him the right way in the red zone specifically. But you know that Jimmy Grant scares me. Lockett scares me on the offensive side of the ball, and then Russell Wilson with the way that he's just able to extend plays scares me.
Yeah, I think, you know, one, like I said, going back to Lockett, you know, the coverage units for the Seagulls have been fantastic this year, but they'll be tested a ton this Sunday, and I really hope Terrence Garvin can come back to get that core special teamer back. That would be a very welcome addition, so I'll be watching that Garvin storyline close. I'll give you one name for the defense since you took Lockett from me. Michael Bennett, just a guy, a defensive tackle that can penetrate. Seagulls don't play against a lot of 4-3 fronts. They don't always have a lot of success against the run against 4-3 fronts. I'd be worried if it became a Cody Wallace versus Michael Bennett pass rushing situation.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I am worried about the edges on those guys as well, too. I mean, let's face it, they're going to have their issues with AB, but I mean they've got a great a solid secondary, obviously that can be physical with you, and you know if you force Ben Roethlisberger to get rid of the ball maybe sooner than what he wants to, that's when his mistakes happen. You know, Ben has what's the stat on this? He's thrown an interception in every game except for one, right?
I'm trying to think. I'd have to look it up just to make sure that was accurate. Sounds accurate. Now, which game
let me pull these up for you right here. I was just looking at this the other day here. maybe I'll get it.
San Francisco did not have an interception.
Right. Are you looking at it as well too? Is that the only game?
Yeah, that's the only one.
So every other, now, although he's missed quite a few games, you would like to see him come through a game without any interceptions, because go back and look, go to Pro Football Reference and look at the teams that have not turned the football over. I mean, it's a captain obvious stat, but I mean, go look at the teams that have not turned the football over at all during a game, and you know how many times they've won. I mean, it's just that and explosive plays, you know, are key elements. Yeah, San Francisco was the only one he did not throw an interception in, and in the other 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 that he's played in, at least one, and then obviously he had what was it? 3 against Cincinnati was the worst game. He can't do that. I mean, he can get away with one interception against Seattle as long as that's the only turnover. But the defense better get something on the flip side. Jacoby Jones going to make it through the rest of the season, or is he going to be gone?
I say he does, just because Tomlin is a very stubborn man, and I think he just holds on to him. I don't think he should, and I mean, you know my feelings. I wasn't, you know, crazy about the move to begin with. I think the blocking still has to get better, but Jacoby just struggled to catch the ball, which is a nice starting point for any return man.
Why don't you tell the people what you're going to be working on the rest of the week?
Well, definitely, since we touched on Seattle, John and I will have our scouting report up towards the end of the week. You know, that's always one of our favorite things to do. I know for some people it might be a little too much information, but you know how we kind of are wired. We love that, just crazy amount of information. I'll probably do some individual reports, do some more scheme breakdowns. If you look today, I ranked the best Steelers, all the ones on offense that have played at least 10% of the time. I'll have the defense up tomorrow, and we'll get the reaction from Tomlin and his presser tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll have a lot of stuff up on the site, most definitely on Tuesday from the Tomlin press conference. Hopefully David will be back with me on Wednesday. We hope to have a beat writer talk a little bit more about the upcoming game against the Seahawks on Thursday. Alex and I will, assuming they have that coordinator's corner, we'll be going through that with a lot of quotes from you, for you from Todd Haley, Keith Butler, and Danny Smith. Danny Smith's fantastic to listen to in those things as well, too. Alex, I appreciate you sitting in for David, too. It's always good to have you on the show. I know the listeners, several of them are glad to hear from you as well, again as well, too. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter, at Alex_Kazora. Haven't said that too many times in the last several weeks. You can follow my co-host, David Todd, at David M. Todd. You can follow the show, at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You know where to go for donations to support this show. You know, Alex and all my guys do a tremendous job as well, too, and I shout out to them every week as well, too. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.